Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart.
Well, today's talk is the challenge of and to our children. I'm probably not telling anyone here anything that you don't know. Children are a challenge. I should know that because I was a child. I was a child up until earlier this year when my mother died. Because if you have a parent living, you are still somewhere in this universe a child. Someone remembers you when you were like that. And I was a challenge as a child. And that was my job. That's a good description, a good job description for children, to be a challenge, to challenge adults, to challenge authority, to test limits, to break limits, and ultimately to find some strength and love and acceptance and limits that should not be broken, but you only learn by trying. Children are a challenge. They're a hard responsibility. And it's difficult in our age to raise children. There's so many distractions. There are so many things that compete for the children's attention that erode the parents' authority. And this is the part that often gets forgotten, so many things that erode the parents' attention to the children. We have so much to do. We're so busy. We have such important lives to create, to maintain, things to build, things to buy, telephones to be connected to, internets to chat on, work to do, work that doesn't just take 8 hours or 12 hours, but we take home and we take on vacation. And it is so easy to get distracted from what is, I think, and I don't mean this in a sexist way because I mean it as a job for all human beings, the most important thing that we do as human beings, which is to try to pass on to the future, to our children, a world that they will believe is amenable to their efforts and worthy of their engagement and not simply something to either tolerate or escape. And that is, as the President of the United States said in the first debate, hard work. It's hard work to raise children. It's hard work to have children. It's hard work to put your attention where your attention needs to be. And that's on our children. I was a child. I'm now a parent and a grandparent. And I'm a parent and grandparent and an uncle, not simply to my immediate children, and I use the term immediate as you do immediate family, but to all children. We cannot have a social contract that allows us to believe that the world will treat our children better than we treat the world's children. We cannot expect the love that we have for our children, the respect that we want to give our children, the sense of worth and dignity that we want our children to have, to be anything other than what we model for all of the children and for all of the world. Yes, you start with the immediate family, and you start with the immediate children, with your time and your attention and your caring. And no, I understand we cannot love equally every creature on the earth, but it is very hard to extend our loving out there if it doesn't begin somewhere. If it doesn't begin with those vulnerable little creatures that we have created, that our children have created, that our brothers and sisters have created, that our church community has created. This is where the future starts. It is our children's job to be revolting. And I mean that in every sense of the word. It is our children's job to believe as an article of faith, part of the faith of youth, that they can do a better job than the adults that raised them. And the great secret that we can't tell them until they're ready, Mike, we can't tell you till you're ready, is that it's our secret faith too, that you will do a better job than we did. It's a necessary article of faith that the world can be improved. And I use the word faith in an almost classically irrational evidence of things unseen kind of way. Because when we look around our world, we modern people believe often, probably overwhelmingly, that the world is going to hell, and it just at times doesn't seem much we can do about it. The children are going to hell, the music stinks. That doesn't make any sense. It's filled with violence. It's vulgar. It's filled with sexual innuendo. I was thinking about sexual innuendo this weekend because, bear with me on this, it may not be going where you think it is. My wife and her two girl cousins went off to Montecito, where they're staying at the Montecito Inn. There was a song back in the 30s. There's a small hotel with a wishing well. I wish that we were there together. Those were really dirty lyrics for back then. That was almost as bad as, oh, do it again. I may say no, 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 but do it again. My point being, this generation didn't introduce sexual innuendo to the world. This generation did not introduce violence into the world. This generation is not unique in its parents' viewing that they are just terrible and disrespectful, all the way back to, in every age, to Socrates complaining about how the youth of Athens has lost a sense of how to be educated, of how to be a citizen. All the way back into biblical times, you find every generation seeing the next generation as having been uniquely bad and on a one-way course going to hell. Well, mate, amen. Hallelujah. It's just both true and not true. Our lives and our societies and our sense of family change. Our standards change. But what remains constant is that our love and our connection to the future count for something. And that modern times are always a unique challenge to the world. Our kids live with the fear of terrorism. It's not a completely weird and irrational fear. Our kids live, and as parents and grandparents, we live with the fear of drive-bys, of other children with guns, of violence, of killing. Those are not irrational fears. My generation lived with teachers walking into the room and yelling, "Drop!" Pardon me, Mrs. McMurray, why are we dropping? Well, because an atomic bomb might go off down the street. Okay, so I'm dropping under my desk. Yes, and when you dive under your desk, make sure you close your eyes so the flash doesn't blind you, because an atomic bomb could cause some retinal damage. And open up your mouth so that the shock waves don't blow out your eardrums. Thank you, Mrs. McMurray. I'll be sure to do that when next time you yell drop and there's a flash and a concussion. So we were raised with that. Let's see, when was another good time to have children? I guess the parents' generation during World War II. Some of you saw the movie. Some of you were there. Over 30 million human beings died during World War II. Jews were exterminated in showers and in ovens. Gypsies, Unitarians, leftists, homosexuals, destroyed. People were starved to death. They were bombed. They were killed. We lost thousands and thousands in one day on the beaches of Normandy. What a world to bring children into. When was another good time to... Oh, maybe during the flu pandemic in 1919, where over 30 million people, over 30 million human beings died of the influenza. That was a good time to have children. My generation listened to Bob Dylan in Masters of War saying, "You Masters of War, you brought in the worst fear that anyone can have, the fear of bringing children into the world." When was a good time? When knights were bold in the time of the Crusades? Not particularly if for any population, neither the Crusaders or the Crusaded particularly had a very good deal there. Well, let's try maybe the times in ancient Greece and read the Iliad and see children dashed off the walls of villages and towns where they were overrun, or read the Bible. It's a pretty tough book. All of this is not to depress you. All of this is to say that the world, and I may have succeeded in depressing you, but that wasn't the intent. This is to say that the world has always been a tough and inhospitable place. And our fears are generally not related to what the actual dangers are. And I certainly include myself in all of my glorious human irrationality. I, too, fear terrorism, and I fear terrorism in the next couple of weeks. And human beings are dying all of the time from human violence. What are the headlines that we read? The headlines that we read are about terrorism. They are about what groups should or should not marry. And only now, slowly, after more than 10 days, is a real issue coming up, and it's not particularly political, but more of our lives will be touched by the flu than by terrorism in the next 12 months. Whatever the terrorists manage to do, I promise you that more Americans will die from the flu. 35 million flu shots just disappeared. But we don't relate the dangers to the actuarial odds. We deal with the things that we are used to dealing with. My friends in Florida do not understand how we as Californians live with the constant threat that the earth itself will move under our feet and open up a chasm into which we will fall. They have mixed feelings about that, by the way. Many Californians cannot understand why people decide after long and full lives to retire to Florida, unless it's a kind of death wish, wanting to be swept away by the hurricanes that God obviously sends as a rebuke to Florida's mathematical skills. We all make adjustments to the realities, and we all live in various forms of denial. And it's one of the only things that lets us get up and in the morning and engage the world. It's a necessary article of faith. I got up this morning to be here at 9:15, turned on NPR, and found out that there were already, by 7 o'clock, 5 Sig alerts. Because one of the acts of denial is Southern Californians don't believe in rain. We may believe in God or gods or paganism, but we do not believe in rain, even against the clear evidence that the streets are wet and our windshield wipers are on. So we still drive at 85 miles an hour and turn and spin and crash and turn over. It was an adventure coming here. I may get home. But we don't much think about that when we get in our cars. We don't much think about the things that we don't much think about. And we look at the world today, and we look at the challenges that the world has for our children, and sometimes we feel overwhelmed by it. Our children must believe that they are important. Our children must believe that the world, though not perfect and never will be perfect, is shapeable by their will. They must believe that they, at least at some point in their lives, that they can do a better job of fixing the mess that they inherit. And it is the job of the adults and the challenge to the adults to stay engaged in the world, despite the fatigue and the sense that it is overwhelming, all of the violence, all of the problems, all of the history. In my recitation of woes, I didn't even deal with civil rights. I didn't deal with what's going on in Africa and Asia and the largest source of preventable death in the world, which is dehydration. There's so much that we are called upon to do in the world that we can do as adults, that we can encourage our children to engage, that we can work together, knowing that the world is not finished, and knowing that we can work on its maintenance and improvement together from generation to generation. Our children will know what is important to us by what we do, not simply by what we say. Our children will know that they are important to us by the time that we spend with them, the time that we are engaged in working with them, yes, even arguing with them, and staying faithfully within the argument. Love and connection are not simply a sense of saying, yes, honey, everything will be okay. They're a sense sometimes of standing toe-to-toe and battling and staying engaged in the conversation, even as we stay engaged in the process of life. We will fatigue, and it's our children's job and challenge to know that and to encourage us to stay connected. Our children will wander off in directions that we think are completely crazy. And it's our job to remember our youth and some of the crazy twists and turns that some of us might have taken, and to remember, hopefully, the reconciliation that we, if we were lucky and we worked hard, eventually forged with a previous generation. From generation to generation, some things change. And we tend to see only the things that we see as not being improvements. We don't see in the moment of panic, of fear, of disaster, of disgust, of separation, the benefits that time has brought. We should be concerned that 35 million flu shots disappeared. We should also celebrate that there were 20 million or 23 million flu shots, and that there were flu shots the year before and the year before and the year before. And the kind of pandemic like the influenza of 1919 is unlikely to happen. We need to understand that every age has its own blessings and its own curses, and that we acknowledge both of them, and we have the opportunity of working with our children in our immediate family and in our extended family to help maintain, create, and sustain a better world for all of them, because that's core belief and faith against the odds is what keeps us connected to the future. Our children are the scouts and the agents and the representatives and the carriers of not simply DNA codes, but of our lives and our efforts and our values and it's our job to arm them with love and sustain them with kindness and confidence and guidance and accompany them physically and vicariously as they create a future out of what we gave them today. It is a heck of a challenge, and it is the most important and joyful thing that we can all do, and that is reach out to and with each other and journey for our time together to tomorrow.